garage there at the victim's house.
Gun at the time, and we just decided to go cruising. And when we went cruising, we seen another guy from another gang. I was Bartlett.
Sir, arrest you have?
Presidential
Bird Ranch. Drug
plant,
you?
Take everything out of your pockets. Stick them up on the counter of your belt. Hat, watches.
The police automatically arrested me for murder one, accessory to a murder, and offering to sell marijuana.
Keep your hands on the counter, spread your legs, step back.
I'm in for murder, intent to commit robbery, intent to commit murder.
This program is about kids in trouble with the law, and in trouble with themselves. It's about situations that are all too frequent today, children whose lives have become so turbulent, so disarrayed, and in many cases just plain violent, that society, at least in the form of the law, is compelled to interfere. In a sense, this is also then about the juvenile justice system, a motley collection of institutions that is supposed to treat, to help, reform, rehabilitate, to guide, or do whatever else is needed to salvage these young lives from waste or destruction. In this program, we're going to take a look at the problems from a different perspective, rather than looking at the juvenile justice system, which in any case varies greatly from state to state and city to city. We're going to look at the kids themselves. We're going to hear from several who, for one reason or another, have become deeply involved in this process called juvenile justice. First of all, to mention there are three basic categories into which the juvenile justice system classifies these youngsters. The first is the dependent or neglected child. That's one whose case is actually being taken up by the court as against the parent and for the child. The second broad category is the controversial status offender, the runaway, the truant, the curfew violator, the kid beyond the control of his parents, called a status offender because their acts are illegal only when they are still a minor. The third category of young people in the justice system are those charged with acts that would be illegal in any age group, such as murder or robbery, arson, rape, burglary, and the like. We're going to hear first from Pat. Her legal classification is technically that of a dependent or neglected child. However, she's in the past been arrested for status offenses, and her story is perhaps a typical story of the so-called status offender.
Why did they arrest you?
Incorrigible runaway.
Why did you run away?
Because my father beat me. I ran away, and then I went to my school counselor because, you know, I had, my fingers were broke and stuff like that. So I went to my school counselor at my school 2 days after I'd run away, and he called a social, while he was calling the social worker for me to come and see me, the police came to the attendance office at the school and arrested me.
Unable to return home, Pat was eventually placed in Rosemary Cottage, a privately operated treatment center for girls. Rosemary Cottage is community-based, reflecting the growing belief that kids in trouble should be helped within the community rather than extracted into an unrealistic institutional setting.
Essentially, our youngsters are kids who have failed persistently in just about everything that they have tried, largely because their families have not given them much emotional support. Largely because they have been shunted from place to place, have had a variety of different placement. Their families have been broken up usually. They've been in foster homes. They've been in other institutions.
Well, I was living in a foster home, and I ran away from that because they were constantly putting pressure on me about my boyfriend being black and different things like that. And it was the same hassles I had at home. So I ran away, and I was gone for about 8 months, and then I was arrested and went to juvenile hall. And then I was transferred to McLaren Hall. And then after staying there about a month and a half, my social worker brought me here.
Most of us will say that we'll probably take 5 boys in a treatment program to 1 girl any time. Girls are much more difficult to get started with. They are more defensive.
I came out of the hall where I was used to having to have a big mouth and push everybody around and not getting anything. So I acted the same way here and thought I would get something.
It's often important for youngsters to learn that there are causes and effects, that there are sequences to living. And what we attempt to teach is really a step-by-step kind of a pattern of achieving things, of coping, of learning, of doing a job, of finishing a project, of handling a relationship.
Well, in looking back over your life, Pat, do you feel your problems were your parents' fault or your fault?
My parents' fault, because I was at too young of an age to know what I was really doing. I didn't understand the situation. And if my parents would have been strong enough in their relationship, they could have prevented what happened with us. But their relationship wasn't sturdy, so mine couldn't be either.
This is strictly second best. Placement is not a substitute for a home. It is not a substitute for a parental relationship. We can't ever make it come out the same way. We're strictly in the business of doing the repair job, of patching up, of helping as much as possible.
Abused children, neglected children, runaways, truants, kids in trouble, true, but certainly they cannot be called criminal as yet. They become involved in our juvenile justice system even though they're not particularly likely to enter the world of hardcore adult crime. And that points up one of the most complex problems of juvenile justice. The system is being called upon to do more than simply prevent crime. With status offenders and neglected children, the concern is not simply to keep them out of trouble with the law, but rather a more general concern that if they continue living as they have, they will grow up unable to adequately function in a modern adult society. They will, as we heard earlier, continue to fail, and that translates into the whole spectrum of social and personal problems. It means down the line somewhere, poverty, unemployment, sometimes crime itself because of few other alternatives, especially for young women, loneliness, mental illness, drug addiction, suicide. So the juvenile justice systems are challenged not only with the task of preventing crime, but also with the job of aborting such personal human tragedy. We'll be back in a minute to visit a very different kind of setting and talk with the kids involved in some very violent crimes.
Each person sees crime from his own perspective. In conjunction with this two-part series on juvenile crime, this special booklet is being offered. It is a compilation of perspectives from experts who have seen and experienced the problem from the inside out. Perspectives on kids and crime and keeping the two apart. For your free copy, call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
Let me send you this free brochure on kids and crime. Pick up the telephone and dial 800-423-4444, or if you live in California, dial area 213-577-5225. Well, there's no aspect of crime more disconcerting than really violent acts committed by juveniles. Rape, burglary, robbery, mugging, arson, murder. We excuse and even overlook many petty crimes committed by youths, viewing them in a context of the traumas and carefree immaturity of growing up. We think about all the things we did on Halloween or something. But when kids perpetrate murders, armed robbery, and rape, it's a totally different matter. We find it difficult to see how tenderness of years can excuse brutality.
I'm 18 years of age, and I'm in for murder, intent to commit robbery, intent to commit murder.
What were the circumstances that surrounded that?
I'm gonna rob a little burrito stand, and just didn't turn out know, the way we wanted it to.
We have kids who've committed very serious crimes. If you took the 100 kids that got in trouble with the law, we would get the worst 3 out of this 100.
George, you mentioned that there were a couple of guns involved in crime that you were involved with. Where did you get the guns?
From hypes that, you know, they needed a fix or something. So at that time, you know, it was real easy. Ooh, I'd say the most we probably paid for at that time would have been $20. And that ranged from anything from a handgun to a shotgun.
Most of the young men we get would have belonged to a gang before they came to us on the streets. And some of the time, maybe most of the time, a lot of their crimes are gang related.
This one is the gang that I'm a member of. And that's one of the cliques that's in the gang.
What kind of activities was the gang that you were a member of involved in?
Shootings, stabbings, beatings. And most of them, say about, I was involved in about 90%, you know, out of everything that was going on. Because at that time, I was trying to make a reputation for myself. You look for people, like the main ones from a certain, you know, gang. And once you find them, you just do it to them.
Do what to them?
Well, you know, it depends what you have at hand. If you have a gun, or if you have a knife, or if you don't have nothing at all. You know, if you're in a car, pull out a tire iron, bumper jack or something.
Talk about killing the guy?
No, beating him, you know.
Tony, could you tell us how old you are and why you're in?
I'm 18 years old and I got put in jail for attempted to commit murder.
Is this related to gang activity?
Yes. We were drinking, getting high, and we had a gun at the time, and we just decided to go cruising. And when we went cruising, we seen another guy from another gang that was Bartlett, and we asked him where he was from. He said Bartlett. Then we told him Lomas, and he started calling us names, so we got off, and one of us shot at him. And
is the Youth Authority really rehabilitating the kids that are here?
We would like to believe that. Sometimes I think the wards rehabilitate themselves in spite of us sometimes. However, we'd like to feel that what we're offering are helping them rehabilitate themselves and ready themselves for community.
I think the California Youth Authority is, I think it will teach you more things that the streets will. Like, in other words, more criminal ways than you ever would think about in the streets.
What percent, how many of the guys that are here do you feel end up worse because they've been here?
90%.
Are worse?
90%. And I say 90% will come back too.
I'm speaking for myself, I can't speak for the Youth Authority, but my experience is that until a young man, he decides that he wants to change, we can present or have all the best programs in the world, but until he makes that decision, he's going to remain what he is, a juvenile delinquent.
If you had it to do over again, would you do it differently?
No, I don't think I would do it at all, period.
My goal is to get married and live a happy life and, you know, support my family the best way I can. First, I'll teach them to respect each other, to respect the law, and not to break any laws and not to go through the same thing I went through, because it's miserable living the way I am.
Miserable living here?
Yes, while miserable living in jail, you're away from the people you care for, you're away from the people you love, and you can't do what you want. You gotta eat when they tell you to eat. You gotta take a shower when they ask you to take a shower. You can't do these things, you know. Can't do what you want in here, and I feel that every ward that's in here cries at night once in a while.
Out of what? Just out of frustration?
No, well, for being in here, just for being in here, you know, and just crying for the mistake they did, because the mistake they did don't pay. That mistake only took them not more than half an hour, and they're paying several months out of their life for that mistake.
You feel that you lost several months of your life that you'll never be able to get back?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Each person sees crime from his own perspective. In conjunction with this two-part series on juvenile crime, this special booklet is being offered. It is a compilation of perspectives from experts who have seen and experienced the problem from the inside out. Perspectives on kids and crime and keeping the two apart. For your free copy, call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
You need to find out what is behind the entire picture, the gang element, what the real cause is, how to treat that cause. So pick up the telephone and dial that toll-free number, 800-423-4444. Or in California, Alaska, and Hawaii area, 213-577-5225, and find out in this brochure about kids and crime. Well, as we heard earlier, much of the violent youthful crime taking place on our streets is a part of gang activity. Also, in most areas of the country, the youth crime scene can't be understood apart from the world of drugs and drug traffic. As one official told us, one of the biggest changes in the juvenile crime picture during the past 20 years has been an increase in violent acts committed under the influence of drugs. Some officers have felt that perhaps 50% of all crime is drug-related. Crimes that probably would not have occurred had the perpetrators not been high, as they say, on some drug or another. In addition, as we're about to hear, many young people find themselves entangled and implicated in the often very sober and mercenary crimes that surround the business of drug traffic, a business where the risks are high. But, of course, if they get away with it, the sums of money are very sizable.
Well, I offered to sell marijuana to somebody who got shot and killed. And I called the police and told the police about the murder. And the police automatically arrested me for murder one, accessory to a murder, and offering to sell marijuana. Because they hadn't found the guys who had done it yet. And then they found him and dropped my charges just down to offering to sell marijuana.
How did you get involved with drugs in the first place?
I wanted to go out and, you know, meet other people, and I met the wrong kind of people, and that's what got me in trouble.
When you say you met the wrong kind of people, what kind of people are you talking about?
Well, people that are into drugs and people that commit murders.
Why was the person murdered?
They wanted his money. They wanted his $4,000, I guess, that he had, that he was going to buy the marijuana with.
Anita was committed to the California Youth Authority, where she spent about a year and a half. During the last few months of that term, she lived in an experimental institution called SPACE, SPACE, which stands for Social, Personal, and Community Experience, located in a fairly typical Los Angeles neighborhood. SPACE houses about 25 Youth Authority wards who are about to be released on parole. It was designated to combat the disturbing fact that in the first 6 months back on the street, a high percentage of youthful offenders get into trouble once again.
We go from a very strict confinement to what has become an unfamiliar atmosphere. So this program was designed to be a transition where you would do that very slowly under very strict supervision. And it gives the young people a chance to get out here and get a chance to try out the streets before they're absolutely free.
I got a job last week as a receptionist for a busing company on Wilshire.
Did you have any trouble getting the job?
No, I didn't.
We've got a very large color map available of Los Angeles County. So we use that map as a training device for people who are going out to look for jobs or to try to learn to get around in the city and county. And when you've been locked up for a long time, that's a big job to try to learn how to get around.
I don't go in when I go on a job interview and tell them I've been locked up. They don't need to know that unless they ask me. And then I'll be very honest about it and say, yes, I was.
What are your long-range goals? What do you want to do for the rest of your life?
Well, one of my goals right now is to move out of L.A. And then when I go back to San Diego County, I want to go to college and major in astronomy.
We are a very reality-oriented type of program, and that is that we say it's you're 18 now, you're a legal adult, and you're going to have to get your act together and do things on the street that keep you from getting arrested again. And so we focus on that, taking responsibility for yourself.
Probably the most fundamental problem on the juvenile crime scene is that most of these young kids, after an offense and release from an institution, simply don't make a successful transition back into normal life. That's most dramatically illustrated by the fact that the large majority of hardcore adult criminals were, when they were young people, in and out of some or another kind of juvenile institution, undergoing a so-called rehabilitation process, which obviously didn't work. A job, money, advice, the right kind of friends, that's what a young person needs coming out of confinement. Mostly a loving family, but then if he'd had that, he wouldn't have been in confinement in the first place, maybe. You can't say always, but at least maybe. But he probably will find precious little of that kind of comfort, that kind of friendship, that kind of helpful advice. We talked with a young man who had faced this problem a number of times. When we met him, he'd been back in the streets several years and was able to reflect on the entire experience of reintegration into normal society. Jimmy Sims' trouble with the law began when he was only 8 years of age, when he was arrested for stealing some other kid's bicycle. From then on, he was in and out of juvenile institutions in Louisiana and California for theft, shoplifting, and burglary. The last time he was jailed was in a California Youth Authority institution from which he was released at age 21.
When I was released, first thing I said to myself was, I'm not going back. You know enough to stay out. And I kept pounding it into my head. And when I talked to my parole officer, I told him, I said, look, Mr. Reed, I said, I need some help. I said, I'll paint walls. I'll put pipes in for you. I'll do anything. I'll help the kids. I said, but just give me the little money I need to survive on.
Jimmy, how do people react to learning that you have a criminal record?
Well, they act negative toward it. You know, they think that because you have a bad record, they think that you're a bad person. You know, they don't look at all the possibilities that why that you committed the crimes. They just say he's bad, so automatically they exclude you. You become an outcast in people's lives. They don't want, you know, they just don't want to be around you.
Jimmy's transition back into society was made easier by his association with a now nationwide program called Volunteers in Parole. Volunteers in Parole brings recently released parolees into contact with attorneys who volunteer to fill the role of friend. Jimmy talks about his relationship with Los Angeles attorney Joe Austin.
Now, Joe gave me this trust that I needed, that build-up. Now, just this year here, during last year, 75, during the summertime, we were swimming in this pool and everything, and I said, wow, I like to do this a little early. He said, well, you can do it. I said, how? I said, you're not at home. So he just said, well, I'll give you a key. And like it kind of amazed me because this is the first time that someone has ever done me like this. You know, go give me a key to their house and they're not at home. You know, and he showed me a lot of trust, which gave me a lot of courage to even do more things for myself because of that trust.
Jimmy advises young parolees to pursue further education as a key to successful reentry into society. He himself attends technical school during the day where he's studying electronics. In the evenings, he attends Los Angeles City College. His long-range goal is to become a lawyer.
I like the way the judicial system is set up. It's set up, it's the best in the world, the way it's set up. And I like the way it's organized, so I like to become part of it.
Can the ex-offender really ever be reaccepted fully into society?
No, because we got corporations who discriminate against you. Even the government discriminate against you. I can go to the government and ask them for a job working for the post office or any other agency, and they would turn me down because of my record. Okay, give you an example. I was working for the department store out on Road in Los Angeles. And I worked there for 3 months, and I was their best worker. I started at $2.75 an hour, got a raise up to $3.25, and the clerk. And I was the hardest worker, and the man told me, "So you got a good head on you," because I was doing the paperwork also. He said, "I'm going to give you a higher position and make you assistant lead man." Now, the insurance company found out that I had been arrested and had a record. So they called me up to the office, and they said, "You've been arrested. We can't bond you." And I said, "Why not?" I said, "I've been here 3 months, and you look at my work. I haven't taken anything from him, you know." They said, "We're sorry." Like, when he terminated me, I walked down the ramp crying. I actually cried. And I told my wife about it. I told my sister about it. I actually cried. That's the first time tears ever ran out of my eyes behind a job, because I was trying to do for self. And I figured that they didn't want me to do for myself. They wanted me to get out here and commit a crime. But I wasn't about to get out and commit a crime. See, before I commit a crime, I starve.
Like all of us, the kids we heard from are faced with the challenge of living and succeeding in this, at times, quite difficult world. But unlike most of us, if we can include us in this, at a very early age, they fail dramatically. And they entered the juvenile justice system, whose avowed purpose was to keep them from failing permanently. Is the system working? Now, no doubt in some cases it helps kids get back on the right track, and maybe for the very first time. Is the system, though, working to prevent crime? The answer to that seems to be no, not really. Most adult criminals were once juvenile offenders whom the system could not seem to change or affect. Of the many officials we talked to in the juvenile justice system, none seemed defeatist, but on the other hand, none offered a glowing report of the system's success. Certainly, we've never been satisfied with the institutions we've evolved to combat crime, either on the adult or the juvenile level. This is not to say the situation is hopeless, but what it does mean is that we must find ways to help kids with their problems before they come into serious conflict with the law. Next week, in a follow-up program, we'll be looking not only at the cause of juvenile crime, but also at efforts to prevent juvenile crime. Be sure to join us next week for our program entitled An Ounce of Prevention.
For the free literature offered on this program, write Gardner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. In Canada, Box 44, Vancouver, B.C. Or in the continental United States, you may call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. In California, dial direct, 213-577-5225. All literature is free upon request.